This is Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bektesh. Thanks for joining us for our candidate chat series leading up to the May 2nd election in Aspen. I'm joined by Steve Skadron, who is running for his third and final mayoral term. Steve, thank you for joining me this morning.
Yeah, thanks, Allison. Thanks for hosting.
Do you have an opening statement, kind of a candidate ambition that you'd like to start with?
Well, I can tell you why I'm running.
That's great.
Allison? Serving as a mayor, especially serving as the mayor of Aspen, is a privilege and a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to better the community I love and to serve the friends and neighbors I care about. And I'm seeking re-election to keep our positive momentum going.
Can you say just a couple of the things? Why is this the community that you love? What are the characteristics that stand out to you?
Well, when I've been here 22 years, going on 22 years, which I can't believe. And I came because I came for the mountain town culture, for kind of the for all the things that people move to mountain towns. And I never dreamed in a million years I was going to be involved in the political scene in a town like this one. So what was important to me was to preserve those qualities of the community that attracted me here in the first place.
The mountain town community.
Yeah.
Okay. What's different about being a mayor as opposed to a council member?
You know, I served on council prior to being mayor, and I sat next to Mick, former mayor of Mick Ireland, and Mick used to say, it's 30% more work. But that was always curious to me because Mick was never a council member, so he never knew the amount of time council members invested. But that is in fact true. The demands on time, the time mayor, are quite greater than those of a council member, although council members do a huge amount of work as well.
So how are you spending your time in ways that council isn't? What are the above and beyond time constraints?
The one really fascinating part of being mayor is how you can set the agenda and prioritize things that you feel are important. And I think I've been good at that. And that has brought an additional amount of work and interest and curiosities and review of the things I've been doing. All these things I've initiated, like uphill economy to climate or environmental stewardship issues that have resulted in various invitations, places. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Do you hold like office hours, for lack of a better word? How do you communicate or hear from the public right now?
I get asked about that. I don't have office hours, say from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays, because I found that that would actually limit my flexibility. Because I get asked to attend a lot of things, and I'm everywhere, and I try to say yes to everybody as best as I possibly can. Say yes to everybody who wants something from the mayor.
So, how do people contact you? And like, they contact you and ask for a one-on-one, or how does the public reach out to you?
Primarily email.
Okay.
Email's best for me.
Does that happen a lot? Do you talk to random public members of the public?
It takes me 45 minutes to buy bananas at City Market when I walk. So.
Is it always the same thing? What are you hearing from people?
A lot about issues of the day, whatever the hot issue is people talk about. I mentioned earlier I have a 9 o'clock appointment because I got an email from one constituent who said, I just need 5 minutes, can I come by? Sometimes I wonder if you just need 5 minutes, perhaps we could summarize it in an email and do it really quickly, but I like to be as accessible as possible.
Okay. So you have been mayor for 2 terms now, and as you said, council member before that. Are there missteps along the way? Are there things you would have done differently?
That's what you're starting with?
Yeah. We've been chatting for a minute here.
Not all the great successes. But yeah, there's a couple things if I could do over, and perhaps this last term I would. One of them was around the powerhouse. And while I support the direction we initiated at council, the one I think mistake we could have addressed was putting a hard deadline on when that decision needed to be done. We got caught up in the idea that the old art museum was still occupying the space, so we didn't have to get it done right away, so we allowed this conversation to run on. And then the library, the county came to us and said, can we use that space for another 9 months? So we let the kind of, and we gave it to the library. So there wasn't, we didn't impose great enough urgency on the decision and allowed it to run. So I would have, we could have handled that one better, I thought. If I could have that one back, I would.
You do think ultimately it was good to not allow that kind of mixed-use space move in and use that for city offices for now?
The fact that it is now being used for city offices is turning out to have community value. I, if you're asking me if I regret the decision we took to pursue the concept that the brewery team delivered, no, I support that. I don't feel that was wrong.
So you find it regrettable that now they don't have a space to do that?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
That's not what I'm saying. All I'm saying is that the decision, the amount of time the decision took, I regret. I wish we could have come to a yes or no decision within a 3-month or 6-month time frame rather than a year and a half. That's all I'm saying.
Do you think it would be right for the city to find a space for something like that to happen in? You know,
that's not the city's responsibility.
Okay. That did allow then also the shift in where city offices will go while we're building a new city hall, including the decision to keep the armory as city offices indefinitely. Can you talk about that decision?
What are you asking me broadly? The decision around the city hall?
I thought those two calls were kind of back to back. That first, the public space kind of the powerhouse didn't go through,
and then
city hall.
As I recall, they were. One was not contingent upon the other. They were independent decisions.
Okay.
The city hall was quite a complicated process and a thorough one that involved community engagement over several years. And really the whole Galena Plaza design started back in the early 2000s. It's going on, as many things do in this community, for 15 or 20 years. The city hall, it's necessary. While nobody loves to go out and build anything, it's an important infrastructure improvement that will serve the community, I feel, for generations to come. And keeping the heart and soul of government in the traditional space was something that speaks to our historic roots, we thought. So,
the vote about the armory showed that the public does want some kind of space for public use. Is there anything on the horizon that could serve as that?
Yes, the vote about the...
About using the armory as a public use, as a public space.
As a community space?
Yeah.
Well, the desire for space in town is great. The new City Hall project will deliver in the new building, I believe, two big public meeting rooms, kind of like the one that the library has now delivered, the new meeting room at the library, which is fantastic, by the way. So there'll be a second ground floor meeting room, which I think will ultimately become the new City Hall chambers. That'll be after this administration. So,
well, let's talk about what this administration is going to be looking at. What are the big things that are...
Allison, I love those words, this administration, like it's Washington,
D.C. Let's say that.
This administration. So.
What are the things that are going to be facing whoever's mayor and the next council over the next 2 years?
The next 2 years? Well, there's three things I want to address. They're really important to me. One is prioritizing pedestrians in the downtown core. And what I want to do is extend the Hyman Avenue Mall 2 blocks to the east. Right now it stops where Burberry and Ute Mountaineer and Montclair is. And I want it to go 2 blocks further, all the way down to the Art Museum. So we would have a corridor running from the Art Museum down to, from the Wheeler down to the Art Museum. And what I hope is that would foster more vitality both day and night by connecting the Wheeler and the Art Museum with shops and restaurants and gathering spaces and perhaps a more pleasant green space over that stretch. I want to introduce that discussion because we could do so many things. Perhaps introduce a complete street concept, you know, not eliminating parking entirely, but having a street that works not just for cars, but for pedestrians and artists and restaurants and everybody who is desirous of...
Is that something a mayor can do? Like make that decision, or that's like an ordinance? How would you get that to happen?
I would discuss it with the new council.
Okay.
I would hope to raise it as a top 10 goal.
Okay.
Top 10 goal allows us to assign staff time to it.
Great.
And then it would come back in a work session, and we worked through it, entertained public discussion, and then if it was something the public desired, we would move it forward.
It'd be like a new budget line item or something to...
Yeah, exactly, right. Yeah. As far as extending the mall goes, just the look, and now this is way in the details that I don't have yet, but okay. But our malls, in fact, I think tonight are being designated historic. I think that's happening tonight. It's part of, because, anyway, so the new mall would not be a copy of the existing mall. It would be a new design that reflects today's quality, is not a simple replication of what was there before. So many things could happen. We could have, and this is just part of the conversation, the community hasn't, we haven't had this for community conversation yet, but we could, there's a million things we could do. We could have a green space down the middle, a community garden, for instance. We could have the music students playing along that avenue in the summertime, not just over at Paradise Bakery, but we could have a second group. We could invite traffic up and down, pedestrian traffic, where it doesn't really now go. So it's vitalizing a part of town and prioritizing pedestrians in a way that isn't currently happening. Do you want me to go on for one second?
Well, I want to ask, do you see blowback on that? Like, who would that harm?
I've talked with a number of people who would affect, and I've talked first with some of the business owners, including Andy Hecht, who owns the entire block. I stopped in with Charles Cunniff. His team is across the street. Those are two primary business owners. I've talked with Heidi at the Art Museum. I talked with Angie at the Red Brick, because I could see it becoming perhaps an arts and culture corridor. Mm-hmm. And I talked with Angie if she'd be desirous of perhaps a de facto extension of the Red Brick, having some presence over there. As part of the discussion, I ran it by Andy also. And they were generally, everybody I've talked to has been enthused about the idea. Let me follow up on that, because you said what would I like to get done, and what would this administration like to do in the next couple of years? Because that ties into my second point. So the first is prioritizing pedestrians in the downtown core using this method. And that really ties to my second point about leaving the transit landscape forever changed downtown. And I want to do that, and this is quite aggressive, and I want to do that by providing viable alternatives to cars and building on technologies that are not reliant on more lanes and parking garages. So these work in tandem with one another, and it's part of an overall vision where we kind of further de-emphasize automobiles and start positioning Aspen for better functionality as we move into the future. Because I think one of the great problems is, if you ask me what's the greatest problem facing Aspen, one of those problems I would say is that we're drowning in automobiles and we have to rethink the role.
And again, a mayor can maybe make something like that happen by starting the conversation and assigning staff time.
Right, exactly.
Do you have a third?
Yeah, I do. The third, I want to... I think we have a responsibility to improve our affordable housing program, and I want to address that. The program itself is showing its age. You know, we're about 40 years into this great affordable housing experiment, and you know, in the 70s, it was this great mission, and everybody who moved in was you know, back then we were all 25 years old, but now it's 40, and we're all, you know, 65, and the whole makeup of the program has changed. And I want to just make sure that we're maximizing the community's assets, that we're creating new opportunities as necessary for the next generation that's coming, and most importantly, I want to ensure that the rules are being fairly enforced across the board.
Are you talking with that next generation that's coming in? I use next generation as both age-wise, but like, I think there's a new wave coming into Aspen who didn't come specifically because it's a mountain town or to ski, you know, for job opportunities, for the, because we want to live in a walkable town, those kind of things. How do you connect with that next generation?
I mean, just people who are desirous of living here? I mean, what do we...
How do you personally, yeah. Like, do you usually talk with the people who, like old-time Aspenites who have been here for decades, or do you have you heard that new voice?
Yeah, all the time, yeah. You asked earlier, like, how do people get in touch with me? My schedule, you know, for a part-time job, being mayor, the amount of hours I put in, and council members as well, is beyond belief. And part of that's because I try to make myself accessible to anybody who wants to have conversations like the ones you're talking about, old-timers, people showing up at town. So, yeah, I do my best to hear the word on the street and address the issues.
Are those different interests, someone who's new to town and someone who's been here for decades?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, the answer is yes and no.
Okay.
One of the things that causes me the greatest angst, believe it or not, is when somebody grabs me on the street and says, "I love your town so much, I decided to move here." Because back in the day, when I came because of the mountain stuff, and it's all the backcountry things, and I was competing in marathons, and I was trail running, and I came for the environmental stuff. But today, I see it's part of the evolution of a mountain town, or perhaps this mountain town, that people are moving here. So I say, what is it that, oh, great, thank you so much for loving our town. What is it that brought you here? And the answer isn't, I want to ski 100 days.
Right.
It's more the school system and programming at the Aspen Institute. And my first thought is, those are wonderful things, and I embrace them in town, and we should have the best school system, we should have the great, great social programs like the Institute. But those aren't classic reasons to move to a mountain town. Those are reasons you move to kind of a high-end suburb of anywhere USA. So the angst comes from perhaps a clash of values, and this kind of fundamental understanding that to live in a town like this is a privilege. It's not a right. It's a privilege. And I think that privilege carries with it responsibilities. And those responsibilities are to support those values and qualities that make mountain towns special. So it's kind of a little bit of a clash of values as mountain towns mature.
As you weigh those interests, I'm also curious, the electorate of Aspen is actually very small, especially to what I would call like the users of Aspen, people who live in the valley and work here. Who do you just represent the city of Aspen voters or everyone who's, you know, traveling up and down the corridor, and how do you balance those interests?
Allison, first of all, I'm so flattered that you're suggesting I'm the mayor of the valley. Is that kind of what you're saying? Because I'm not. No, my first responsibility are to the voters of Aspen.
Okay.
No doubt about it, absolutely. Interestingly enough, though, the platform we have in Aspen goes, you know, we punch well above our weight here. And we are, this perhaps is changing now, but Aspen has been forever the economic engine of the valley. So we have to be somewhat cognizant of how our actions influence those other communities up and down the valley.
Well, you do use the word privilege to live in Aspen, and I feel like everyone who lives down valley would agree, I'm not privileged enough, I don't have the wealth, I don't have the means to stay in Aspen. And so, but they're helping power Aspen, they're helping making Aspen the economic center by working here and spending their money here. So I'm just wondering if things that maybe down valley commuters would want, and I know you work in transportation, if some of those things come into discussion, or even the chain store ordinance, I mean, you know, those weren't all City of Aspen residents,
right,
but they brought an issue that they felt about Aspen through that council ultimately passed.
Yeah, right. Yes.
I have a couple more questions for you, but I also have some audience questions. Speaking of the chain store regulations, I'm going to kind of combine two of these. What's the city's responsibility for regulating commercial in town, and how long do you think, how soon will we see the effects of that chain store ordinance?
Wait, ask me again the impact of the ordinance.
Well, what's the city's responsibility as it comes to regulating chain stores in town? Or, sorry, commercial use at all, including commercial use that I guess the city is a landlord of.
Well,
and then do you think we'll see the impacts of the chain?
Well, I don't, if it's a broad question about the city's responsibility, I think it's really reflective of the political environment, not unlike Washington, D.C. You know, it goes from regulation to deregulation. And as Bill Sterling said during the, former Mayor Bill Sterling said during the chain store debate, regulation is part of our DNA here.
Right.
From back in the day.
And so, you agree with that?
To some degree, yes. Yeah.
That we should do that. I mean, I guess history has shown that we do that.
Well, we do, right.
Yeah.
Are you talking specifically about the chain store? Well, I'll tell you where I got concerned with the chain store regulation.
Yeah.
Bill is right. For generations, we've involved ourselves in regulations from top to bottom, how big the building can be, how high, the colors, the shape, what it looks like. What we haven't done, where the chain store starts to go over that line, is to dictate what property owners are doing inside their building. And that's where this gave me a little bit of unease, because we've gone to this next level, and I think that's something for us to be wary of.
I want to close with what makes up a good council. You've been a council member. You've overseen council for the last 4 years, and we have two open council positions. So what's the makeup of a good, strong city council?
Yeah. I think it's important for council to work in a constructive and collaborative manner. And I think that starts with an individual's orientation towards community service. I've always said there's two kinds of responses to serving on council. Some over the years, and this is speaking generally, say, I'm on the city council, or I'm the mayor. Others say, I serve on the city council, or I serve as mayor. And I come out of the perspective that this is a matter of community service, and I'm taking my time here, and then I'll step aside and it'll be the next person's turn. So it's important to me that the council is made up of people dedicated not to serving their own ego to drive home an agenda, but to hold the community interest first and serve the community. And I think one of the successes of the current city council sitting next to Ann Mullins and our Daly, along with Adam Frisch, was that at least four members of this council have worked collaboratively and constructively in order to deliver significant outcomes. And one of those is this land use code change we saw, which was the single greatest change in land use since the 1970s. That was not a little deal. That was a massive thing. We only got that done because of the kind of diversity of ideas exchange. An exchange of ideas and an ability to work in a constructive manner for a community good. So I think that's where I start with community service orientation.
Will you be endorsing candidates then?
I prefer not to do that because there has to be a sense of collaboration on council. While I appreciate a diversity of views, I think that's really important in any elected body, especially Washington, D.C., which we seem to be lacking at the moment, but that's another. What I value and the success of the current council, as I said, speaks to this collaboration and a good exchange of ideas. So if the current council came back, I could live with that. I do want to say one thing about candidates who are running, something that gives me some concern. And we didn't mention it here, but I'm sure it's a hot issue in that campaign. It has to do with this water rights and the dam issue up on Maroon Creek. I met with the opposing group, this group that came out, the 10 parties. And the first thing I said at the meeting was, I can't believe we're even sitting here having the meeting. This is an issue that, despite the notion that the city's poised to build dams in Maroon Valley, in reality, it's a simple paperwork filing required by the state to protect our rights to your drinking water. And it's an issue that's become politicized. So I'm hesitant to support any candidate who fails to see, who has attempted to politicize this water rights issue. That's a thing where there's management of issues in order to get something you want versus community leadership. And one of the things I appreciate about the current council was that both Ann Mullins and our Daly, along with Adam Frisch and I, had the guts to stand up and make this entire process transparent. Because this has been going on for 40 years, and nobody ever cared about it. And this council said, let's make it transparent and let's deal with this issue. And what's happened is, we moved into a campaign season, it's become politicized, and we're getting essentially beaten up for it. But that says to me, there's people who stand up and do the right thing, instead of those who stand up to do the easy thing.
Or popular. I mean, I think the community was speaking against the vote that you guys, to retain those rights, right?
Well, it's easy to, and it happens in all of our national politics, it's quite easy to take a ridiculously complicated issue, put an emotional spin on it, and propose a simple solution, like build the wall, or drill baby drill, or lock her up. you know, or repeal Obamacare. Whoever thought that would be so complicated? This is the same kind of thing. Stop the dams. It's not. If it was that easy, we'd do it. But there's generational issues here, and all council proposed to do was to take a little time to find viable solutions to this complicated issue. Now, the alternative was to not do that. And we could have either not been transparent about this, and then the current council would have been criticized for doing things in secret, or say the council would have moved forward to give up the water rights. Then the council would have been criticized for being reckless in its pursuit of prudent water management. So what council did was take a bold move and do what we thought was the right thing, to take some time and to find these solutions to what the state requires us to claim as one of the options. Anyway, the question was really about candidates. So,
are there other questions for Steve before we let him go?
Yes.
You can just say it.
Can we have your name, please?
This question is from Elizabeth Stewart Severy.
Who has a voice.
The issue of the dams, I want you to clarify or expand on this thought, which is, you said that the council came out to be transparent about this, and it came from within City Hall to do that, but the issue was actually brought to light by Frank Gardner Smith in his coverage of water rights and Aspen Journalism, and it was more of, from what I can remember and understand, is the city is reacting to Brent's continual coverage of it.
I'm going to restate that. So there's an audience question saying this wasn't totally altruistic of the council to say, you know what, we should start being transparent. There were mumblings that the city's just passing this through without discussion each time, and that's why you brought it up.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's exactly right. We didn't have to be transparent. We didn't have to take the route we did. It was very much because Brent did some really excellent work and reported on this and informed the community. So at that point, we were faced with this issue. We decided to take what we thought was the appropriate action to serve the community interest. Just, for 40 years, nobody knew this was going on. We learned about it, and we're addressing it the best we knew how.
Can I ask a follow-up to that? You said it would be hard. It's a complicated issue. It's a complex issue, and it sounds like you're saying that some members of the public, or perhaps even some members of council, are looking for a quick, easy solution. And I guess my question is, what was the purpose of opening the public discussion if you knew that it was going to need a longer response time than that 2 or 3 months or whatever that the public had before you had to make the decision for the final? Like, it sounds like you're saying the public could not possibly have understood this issue in the complexity short amount of time.
We have a brilliant public here who is engaged and really smart about issues. What I'm saying is the issue is much more complicated than to place an easy spin on it, like stop the dams. It's not quite that easy about don't build dams. So the question council asks is, why can't you just say the words, I won't build the dams? That's what's being asked in the public. Just say the words, we won't build dams. That's the simple response that doesn't address a complicated issue. Elizabeth, does that make, I want to, because you're asking a couple questions here. The public definitely has the wherewithal to understand complicated issues. That's not what I'm saying.
Oh, I totally agree
with
that.
Yeah.
I guess
which is the reason we introduce this into the public conversation. We move forward with it. A better example is kind of the national political scene, where you take these really complicated issues, as I said, like repeal Obamacare, like the president tried to do, And he found out it's much more complicated than showing up one day and just writing a piece of paper and trying to get rid of it. This too, it's much more complicated than having council members say the words, "We won't build dams." Because what that does is trigger a series of actions that ultimately results in the water courts or the states stripping the city of its water rights. And that has to do with really complicated water law that I don't understand, and few of us do. So, but that's what the conversation will be. Just say the words, those words that you won't build the dams, and that'll remove all the community angst. But it's not that complicated. And this is where the city council's walking this really fine line. And that's why the question was, who are you supporting? And I'm saying candidates who attempt to put simple spins on complicated issues, I question that as a leadership quality, because that's not a vision. Don't build the dams isn't a vision. That's the issue of the day that becomes a politicized issue that fails to serve the long-term interest of the community. All this council had the guts to do was to stand up and say, we want to take a little bit of time, 18 months or 2 years, and at the most 6 years, because this filing happens every 6 years, and it's going on since 1971. And if that time the community didn't like where the council was, sue away, or take the necessary action. If dams were to be built, or if that was the direction a future council gives to the city manager, and this is an administrational matter which doesn't require the votes and things, which is another part of the conversation, the question becomes, well, the community has no recourse. That's ridiculous. The community can do two things. Number one, you can recall council members who initiated an action that the community doesn't like, or we have an election cycle every 2 years. Vote them out. Put a new council in who delivers the actions the community prioritizes. It's a politicized matter, again, around an emotional issue that is really complicated, that requires more than a one-word answer. So I want to go back. Your question was, who are you supporting? And I said, I want to serve with people who have the community interest at heart and don't wrap themselves up in the emotional issue of the day. And I recognize the guts it took for two current council members, Ann Mullins and Art Daly, to take the bold action. So that deserves some recognition in my mind, versus candidates who are running this as a political issue in order to get elected based on an emotional tangent. So,
Phyllis, do you have a question? Yeah.
There's a perception in the community that I am aware of that there's an inevitability to Gorsuch House getting approved one way or another. And it's feeling familiar in that the art museum somehow bulldozed its way into creation. And there's a perception that something will have to happen there, and that this mostly excellent council will somehow be persuaded to change the zoning, even though there are members of the community that would like to see this not be hurried and be very carefully assessed. And I would like to hear, I know it's a work in process, but I would like to hear your response that hopefully that you're not going to allow them to steamroll you.
So I'm going to rephrase that, and then also let you know that you have about 5 minutes, I think, before you have to go. So I'm sure he won't be able to spend as much time as we'd like to talk about Gorsuch House, which could be its own hour. It seems to some in the community that Gorsuch House is an inevitability. Are you going to... Do you agree with that? How are you going to handle the Gorsuch application as it continues to come up?
Yeah. First of all, Gorsuch is an open application, so I have to be careful to not bias myself, because the applicant is open to deserves an unbiased review of their application. Generally speaking, my preference would be to see the mountain connected to town, and that lift brought in a lift that. a lift brought down the mountain to capture the historic ski base at the bottom of Lift 1A. As far as the application goes, Phyllis's question was hurrying an application. Mm-hmm. Nothing is ever inevitable, especially on the 1A side. And when I first started on Planning and Zoning Commission a million years ago, it was the 1A project that was the one that kind of launched my entire political career. I voted against it, by the way, back then. What this current council has done was tabled this issue and asked the applicant to get into a room and hammer out these issues. One is the mass and scale. One is the necessity to deliver a great public space. And one is to get the lift down the hill. And I think should the applicant be able to meet those criteria to the satisfaction of the council, it'll move forward. Should they fail to meet that criteria, it won't happen. So if the question is it inevitable, I'd say it's not inevitable.
Did that answer? Steve, thank you so much for your time.
Okay. Yeah, Allison, thank you so much. And thanks to KJAX for hosting. And thanks to Justice Snows. This venue's fantastic, by the way. So thank you.
Steve Skadron is running for another term as mayor of Aspen. You've been listening to Candidate Chats on Aspen Public Radio.